This is 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city, and welcome to the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario, and today I am speaking with Amir Williams, Sergeant, right? Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
All right, we can use that right now, Sergeant, New Haven Police Department.
You can use that. That's my title, so everybody in the city knows me as I'm a sergeant, so.
All right, reporting for duty. So, where did you grow up?
Well, initially in Fairhaven. 77, I was born. My mother and my father, my sister's older than me. She's 5 years older than me. And I was born on East Street, 489 East Street. My grandmother owned two houses, and my father's mother and father owned those houses. And that's where I was born, at Fairhaven on East Street.
How was your grandmother's influence on your life?
My grandmother was awesome, you know, especially after my mother broke up with my father. She always stayed in our lives. Me growing up, I always thought, or I always saw people are closer to their mother's side of the family. Wasn't the case for me and my sister. We were closer to our father's side because we just stayed with them all the time. Even when my father and my mother broke up, separated, we were always over there on a daily basis. So I'm very close to my father's side of the family. So they had a great influence. My grandmother always helped my mother out whenever, you know, we went through a lot of trials and tribulations growing up for financially and things of that nature. My grandmother always was there for us for rides. My mother never had a driver's license, so she come get us for rides. She took us to school. She did a whole bunch of things for us. My grandfather's an influence on us also, as far as, you know, he's a hardworking man. Second grade education, was able to accumulate, own two houses, run businesses. He had two or three businesses growing up, always had two or three jobs. So my grandfather and my grandmother's great influence on us, and trying to show us how to do the right things. And they come from struggle, and they, you know, for us, they made it. They always were there for us financially and did everything that we needed them to do whenever my mother fell short when she was single and by herself.
What kind of ethics stuck with you from watching them as your examples?
Oh, ethics. So they stuck together no matter what. They were married. My grandmother and grandfather met in their teens. I think my grandmother was 19, 18, 19. My grandfather was a couple of years older than her. He was working on a railroad, met her in South Carolina. And, you know, they've been together since they was 19, and they were together until their 80s, until they both died. So hard work and determination and staying together, sticking through whatever you got to go through, you know, to make things happen. They raised my father and his sister and two brothers. They had a decent life, you know, and close-knit. Like, she bought the house, the first house she bought, and then she bought the second house. And so everybody always lived. It was always family in both houses. So to be close-knit and to believe and trust in one another and always have each other's back. So that's some of the ethics and morals that were given to me.
Your mom struggled in life?
Yeah, my father, growing up, me and my father like the same size. But I'm bigger than my father as far as weight-wise. My father was a bodybuilder, though. He worked at Pratt Whitney. He was abusive to my mother growing up. So my mother's a small lady. She's 4'11". We're not big men. I'm only 5'6", but I'm 220 pounds, 225 pounds. That's a lot for somebody my height. My father was a very muscular guy, always had bodybuilding trophies and things of that nature. He worked at Pratt when he made decent money, but he got abusive when he started abusing crack cocaine. My mother found out when I was at the age of 3 years old, and he got abusive, and she got away from him. And then we moved to Norfolkville, 89, 90. Bassett Street, lived with my great-grandmother, Henrietta Outlaw. And that's where it all started for me as far as the transition from Fairhaven, because Fairhaven is mixed. It's black, white, Puerto Ricans. Norfolkville was 99% black. To this day, it's probably maybe 95% black. There's some Hispanics there now. A couple of white people over there, but moved to Norfolkville, and things got kind of rough. Not so much rough. I live with my great-grandmother, but not so much rough as far as financially, whatever it may be, but you get introduced to certain things and certain people. And I got close to one of my cousins. His name is, they call him Mighty. He's doing federal time now. And so I got over there into high school, 10th grade. I was going across 10th grade, and I switched to Hill House. By the time I graduated at Hill House, 17, 18 years old, you know, introduced certain things, certain aspects of life. And, you know, again, money wasn't always a great thing for my mother. Single, and I'm growing into a man, not listening to what I'm supposed to be doing, and started selling marijuana, and then we moved on to selling crack.
You had this foundation now that it was solid on one side and we'll say fluid on the other. Mm-hmm. How important is that to have that solid foundation though at the beginning, that rock?
Well, I can't, it was solid on both sides. Really, we just made terrible decisions. My mother struggled with money. I never struggled to eat anything. I didn't have clothes or anything. Like, I had to do it. We always had food. I always had the things I wanted to do. It's just us being in that neighborhood. My cousin comes from a solid background. Two family households. Father worked at Pratt 182. His mother worked at Yale. His mother still works at Yale. She's in her 80s. She still works at Yale. So he had a solid background. He's the only one to get in trouble in his family. He had brothers and sisters. They never got in trouble. He got in trouble. His father was stern. My Uncle Eddie, rest in peace. His father was very stern. Very old-fashioned type of guy to punch you in your chest when you do something wrong. He played baseball. He was the coach for baseball for us. He took us places. You know, he was a good male role model for us too. So I can't say it's just the fact that we saw different things. He had a better upbringing than I did financially, but we saw different things that we wanted to do, and we thought that, you know, we just made terrible decisions, and we went out there and we started selling drugs. So it was solid on both ends. It's just that we decided that we were going to do stupid things. And like I said, I stopped listening to my mother as I got older. I'm getting bigger than her. Like, some mother's 4'11". My voice is getting deep. I'm making my own decisions. She can't control me anymore. She, you know, I'm not fear her anymore. And so even with his father around, we still going to do what we want to do. Like, he's the type of guy that no matter what you did wrong, the first thing he's going to do in baseball, if you don't do what he tells you to do on the baseball field, you come off that field, punch you in your chest. That's the type of person he was, a very stern guy. And so it's just us being idiots. Mm.
So even, I mean, it still affects children to this day and age, making the right decisions at the right time.
Yes. Making the right decision at the right time is always very important, because that was a crucial point in our lives, being 17, 18 years old. He's 2 years older than me, but we're turning into men. We got to start making decisions for our future. And if you don't make those decisions at the right time early, you have to pay for it, like I did. You know, I caught those cases. I got in trouble. He caught cases, and he continued to do the wrong thing. He's been down since 2010 on his federal case. So he's been down 14 years on 25. So it so happened that I just left that mess alone. But making those decisions, you can end up like him, you know, and I feel bad for him and his kids. You know, they're missing out on their father. He sold drugs, but he wasn't a bad person. And then you have a situation like me where you go, you do your prison time, you come home and things are rough. You got kids you got to take care of. You got responsibilities you got to take care of. And you can't do it the way you want to do it because you're financially unstable. And if you would have made the right decisions early, if I'd have stayed on the path my mother had put me on, going to school, going to college, and doing the things I was supposed to do, things would probably be a lot different today. But as I tell my mother, because she always says that, she said, all the things that you've been through in life, all the decisions you made, all the transgressions, the obstacles that you had to go through because of those decisions, and you still turned out to be a good person, you got a decent job or career, you got your education. Imagine if you didn't go through that negative part. And I always tell her, I think that was God's plan, because he made me go through this stuff. And now other people see my story, they hear my story, and they get motivated and inspired by it.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and I'm talking to Amir Williams. His path from, from the streets to the beat, so to speak. So let's just talk a little bit about, you made some bad decisions early on.
Yes.
There's always a turning point, a switch. And what was that for you?
So the first switch was this, going to prison. And when I got arrested and I knew I wasn't coming home, they gave me a crazy bond on one of my cases. And when they revoked my bond and I went back to court, they put me in jail. They put me in Whaley Avenue. And my mother came and saw me. And when that happened, I just cried. I cried the whole time about this story. I cried the whole time. It wasn't because I was in prison. It was because I let her down. She instilled so much morals and, you know, just taught me to do the right things in life. Like, I was respectful. I never was disrespectful to older people, to women. My mother, she was it. She did everything she was supposed to do. And when she came and saw me, all I did was cry because I knew I let her down. You know, I was always considered smart, always got honors. I was a nerd in school growing up. And so it kind of surprised her and shocked her when I started doing the things I was doing. And it was nothing she could do to stop it. But, you know, that's that messed me up. I mean, when she came to see me, that broke me down. So, can you repeat the question again?
Come again?
Can you repeat the question again?
No, just what was the turning point?
Oh, so the turning point. Oh, so when she came and saw me and I know I let her down, then like being in there, like I did 5 years, I had a 15-year sentence suspended after 5 with 3 years probation. So me being in there for 4.5 years before I just started getting my stuff together, back on track, going to school, getting my college credit. I got some college credits, just doing any program I can do to get out of there because it's a waste of time to me in there. It's no. I always say this. I said this on another interview I had. The worst thing about being in prison, I don't care what no man tells you, is that there's no women there. So that was for me. And plus my freedom, and I had always had authority issues. So I didn't like being told what to do, when to do, how to do it. So it was just a wake up point. Like if you're out here doing knucklehead stuff, they got a place for you, and you're gonna suffer for that time that they're gonna give you. Especially if you got I'm not gonna say intelligence, but my intelligence was to the point to where I knew I was too smart and too able-bodied to be in here, and I call it Groundhog Day. We're doing the same thing every day, and it's no progress, no production. It's like dead time, and that's exactly what it is. So the turning point was when I went there. Then just like, I'm not staying. I don't want to ever come back here again because of the fact that first, disappointed my mother, disrespected the family name, disrespected everything that she taught me, and you know. And I'm following the same footsteps my father followed in. I got 2 kids out there. My son was born. My daughter was born while I was in there. But my son was already 3 years old when I went to prison. And then I thought about them and how, you know, I'm not there for them. I'm an absent father. There's nothing I could do for them. I can't protect them. I can't feed them. I'm actually a liability to them. And so I started thinking about that type of stuff. I just want to get home and do the right thing. And that's what I did.
So you took advantage of some of the programs and opportunities while you were inside to better yourself. You come out, and reentry is always a very difficult situation for individuals. How was the process for you, and what helped you stay on the straight and narrow?
Well, actually, I didn't stay on the straight and narrow when I first came home. When I first came home, initially, yes. 6-7 months home, I had 2 jobs. I worked at this place called Advanced Development and Manufacturing in Guilford. They paid pretty good back then. It was $15, $16 an hour, and I had a part-time job at Expect Discount that was in East Haven. Oh, so, you know, another opportunity came upon me, and I had a stepbrother that taught me back into getting in, you know, involved in the game. That's what we did. I was working. He did everything, you know, for the most part, until I came home from work, and then I would pick up or whatever it may be. But what stopped me the second time was, told you I had a 15-year sentence total. Mm-hmm. So if I would have violated probation, I would have owed that time, 10 years. So I almost got caught 2 times in New York coming back with stuff. And the second time I almost got caught, I was like, I'm about to go do the same mess that I just did. I don't want to be here, especially I don't want to do a bit in New York. I don't want to do any of this stuff. So, you know, I made conscious decisions to make bad choices. And so I made the conscious decision to be like, you know what? Let me fulfill what I got these kids out here. I don't want to disappoint my mother again. I got to stop being selfish. And it took that scare, that first, them 2 times going to New York, come back from New York, to be like, you know what, this is over with. And then I put my head down and did what I had to do. Started school, went back to school. Gateway, got my associate's degree. University of Bridgeport, got my bachelor's degree. Then I got 2 master's degree. Along the way, I got my pardon because I had 13 felonies at one time. So the pardon cleared my record. So I got my pardon, you know, and then, you know, things just started happening for me, you know, for the better. And I end up doing what I'm doing now.
What would be your advice to a returning citizen that's out there that's facing the same temptation that you faced?
Be patient. Everything's not going to come to you now. Everything's not going to be. Once you mess up, you own that. I call it paying the piper. You go to prison, you do the wrong thing, You got to answer society. You got to come home. Got to answer to them again. Is it fair? Maybe, maybe not. But you did it to yourself. It's not like we don't know what's going on out here. We know and we feel that the court systems are against us. We feel that everything's in our face for it to do wrong. You have the options not to do that. And so when you come home and you feel like things are hard, well, they're supposed to be kind of hard. Nothing's supposed to be given to you anymore. We're not supposed to come home and be like, oh, we're going to give this guy a job. You got to be trusted now. So when they don't trust you, they're not going to give you a job. So you got jobs that don't want to hire you because of your criminal background. Jobs that don't want to hire you because you're on probation or whatever it may be. You have to earn that. And if you don't earn that, you know, by doing the right things, then, you know, and you're not going to be patient. You're going to end up back in the streets and doing the same thing over and over again. Be patient. Wait it out. Connecticut is a beautiful state to where they have the pardon process. I'm not advocating for people to go mess up because they know they got the pardon process because, you know, that's just ridiculous. I'm just letting you know that if you have the, you come home and you have that carrot in front of you where you can go ahead and be like, oh, I can get my life together to give them all pardons. Then you can do the things that you want to do. But don't come home from prison and think that things are just going to go your way or things are supposed to go your way because it's not. You got to readjust. You got to get acclimated to being home again, to be having responsibilities. You may have to take that job that doesn't pay well. You may have to take these programs the parole officer or your probation officer wants you to do. You may have to take on odds and ends jobs where you're getting paid under the table, wherever it may be. But come home and come home and do it. Own what you did and, you know, turn into the person that you want to be.
You have taken a very, very different approach in coming back, and you actually became a police officer and are contributing to society. What were the first thoughts of doing that, and who got you involved?
So during my, at the time, New Haven Police Department, they had started hiring. They had a job fair at Gateway Community College. When Gateway first moved downtown, and they were talking about hiring police officers. At the time, I was working at a place called Strive, New Haven. They're now owned by Career Resources, but and I was only making $20,000-$25,000 a year. But to me, that was the first job that gave me a chance right before I got my pardon. So $25,000 a year was like $1 million a year to me because I was working $6-$8 jobs at the time. So when I went to the job fair at Gateway, they were talking about, and I hadn't got my pardon yet. I was still at Strive, but I hadn't got my pardon yet. I went through the process, but at that time it took a little bit longer for you to get your certificate to say that your record was clean. So I went to this job fair. When I go to the job fair, they were talking about you can make $100,000 a year overtime. You know, it's a job that you're going to always have. You're not going to be rich, but you'll be able to do the things that you want to do in life, go on vacations or whatever it may be. It's a good job. We're giving back to the community. We want to hire people from New Haven. So it all sounded good to me. But in the back of my head, I'm like, man, even though I got this pardon, I don't know if it's really going to work because, again, I have a long record. So during the job fair, they pass out this pamphlet. And the pamphlet says, if you receive the pardon, basically they won't hold it against you or we can work around it or whatever it may be. So that gave me a little bit of hope. So I met Officer Dobson. Officer Dobson, she's retired now. They were doing a program. Like I said, they wanted to hire people from New Haven and surrounding areas to be officers. So Officer Dobson ran that program. During that program, she took a liking to me. And during the program, they get you in shape. They try to help you get prepared, ask you certain questions, bring in certain questions that pertain to the police application. And tests, and they bring in people. They brought in people from the prosecutor's office and people that were involved in law enforcement, you know, to teach certain classes. And like I said, she took a liking to me. And so I explained to her what was going on with me. And she was like, as far as my pardon, as far as my past. And she was like, well, we can cross that bridge when we get to it because the program started in 2012 or 13. And so they were trying to get us in shape for the class that started in 2014. So it was 2013 then. So they're running us every day. We're going to just doing these tests every day. It was an everyday program that I went to almost every day. Then they cut it down. And so when it was time to do the background test, or the background or time to start filling out the application, my pardon certificate hadn't come yet. And so I told her about it, and she was just like, again, don't worry about it. When the background comes, you got to do the chip test first. That's a physical test. And then we'll worry about the background. Long, the background up coming, and she just was like, listen, I'm going to be, make sure I'm your, I'm gonna make sure I'm your background officer, because we're going to follow the law when it comes to you. This is police departments with this part and stuff, they like to try to figure out ways to get people out of the process. If I'm not your background investigator, they're going to find a way to get you out regardless if you got a pardon or not. So I'm not going to say she protected me. I'm going to say she guided me through, and she made sure that they were fair to me. So she was very inspirational to me getting this job, because I believe if it wasn't for her, then I wouldn't be on this job, because another background investigator would have been like, oh, we got this arrest, we got this arrest, and so we want to get rid of him. She believed that I changed my life, and therefore I was able to get on the department through her guidance. I won't say protection, through her guidance. And I think it was an act of God, because it all just came together at one time. I'm getting my pardon, New Haven Police Department's hiring. This lady takes a liking to me, and she makes sure that, you know, she believed in my story. She believed in who I was, and she made sure that I got on the department.
How does it feel, especially in life, we need someone that actually believes in us and is there for us? What kind of strength did that give you?
That gave me a lot of strength. It reminded me of my mother. You know, my mother always believed in me. No matter what I did when I was growing up and I was doing right, getting honors, when I messed up, my mother was right there coming to see me, even though she was limited in coming to see me because she never condoned me going to prison. She came. My mother probably only came and saw me 2 or 3 times. And that was a great thing. She didn't accept many phone calls from me when I was in prison, because she's like, I didn't put you there. As long as you was healthy and safe, I'll come see you when I come see you. You write me whenever you need to write me. But back to your question. So having another person like that, because I hadn't had anybody that did that for me. And maybe since then, I haven't had anybody that's like, all right, we're going to make sure that you're right because I believe in you. So having that, that gave me a lot of confidence, because somebody actually believes in you and you don't want to let them down. So it helps me try to be the best person, best police officer, best sergeant that I can be. Because I never want to let her down. And she's retired now. I'm still in contact with her from time to time. But, you know, she's an awesome person, and I always want to thank her for what she did.
You have several hundred pardons under your belt.
Yeah.
How many?
Close to 700 now. I don't know the exact number. So, you know, it's kind of hard to keep track of it before. Online now, I can go into my profile and see all the people that got pardons through me. But before, you just have to mail the stuff in. So it was kind of hard to track, and I never thought about tracking. I never thought I would get to this number. So it's about 600 to 700, and close to 700, and, you know, it's a great feeling to be able to assist people, to be able to motivate people, and people know your story. You know, I've actually had people stop me and like, I seen your news story, or, you know, I heard about you, or I want you to do my pardon because of the fact that, you know, you went through the process and you understand everything. But, you know, it's a great feeling, and it's awesome.
Before we continue, how can they get in contact with you?
Just call my personal number. That's the only number I use. 203-500-3428 if you want a pardon. I'm not the guy that's going to rip you off. I do. It's all types of ways that we can get this done. It's not about payment. It's about really helping people. So I'm not getting rich off of this. A lot of people like to think that. It's about me helping people and giving back. Because me helping with pardons, even people I was in prison with, I've helped get pardons. People that I was cellmates with, that I worked out with in prison, I helped them. They came home and they got pardons. Even as a police officer, I arrested somebody for a domestic case. I got him a pardon. The guy loves me. So, you know, it's another form of giving back to the community. Because like I said, it's not all about money. It's not all about trying to get rich off of this. It's about helping the people, helping the community, and trying to help the town of New Haven better itself so people could go home, or so people could become homeowners, people could get the jobs they want, people can are motivated to go back to school. Because a lot of times people get these records and they sit there and it's like, it's over for me. You know, some people are at home with a record, and they're still thriving. They still want their record. They may want, you know, to get certain licenses, to get certain things that they want to accomplish in life that they can't get because they have a pardon. But overall, to help people and to be an inspiration to people, coming from where I come from, making the poor decisions that I made, the bad decisions, bad choices that I made, it's awesome to see that people reach out to you and people actually respect you and admire you for that.
what people in the youth don't realize is that when you catch a felony, it limits your life drastically.
Yes, it does.
What are some of the things you're not eligible for with a felony?
Life insurance. Life insurance. Some life insurance companies won't take you. You can't get into certain schools. Of course, you can't get into certain jobs. Clearance for certain government jobs. Anything. You can't become a police officer. You can't get a gun license. You can't do a lot of things that you could normally do. You might not be able to get a nursing license. So some of the jobs you just get forfeited from off the rip. So you're limiting yourself to these jobs that are paying, you know, the state, I don't know how to say it, the minimum wage. Yep. Yeah, minimum wage. So you're limiting yourself. So it's, don't get the felony. Or if you do get it, work your way out of it. And so you can get your pardon, so you can go ahead and do what you want to do. But, you know, young people are going to make mistakes when they're younger. They're going to make bad choices, and it's going to happen. Again, I'm not advocating for you to do that. But when you get that felony, just know that that letter is on your back, and that when they ring your name, you're going to get told no, and it's going to be discouraging. It may send you into a depression. You may have some mental health issues or emotional issues afterwards, because some people are very, very highly talented. They have skills that they can do certain things. And they might not have a plan to start their own business or whatever it may be. And if you have your own business, you still get limited to certain contracts you can get. It's a lot of people that come to me that have certain companies that's like, I can't get on government, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. Or certain people do background checks. I mean, they don't want me in their house. So it limits you to a lot of things having felonies. So once you get that felony removed, again, I would advocate for you not to get the felony. But once you get it removed, just take it, be prideful that you got the pardon, and be blessed that you live in Connecticut. Because states outside of Connecticut, New York, is hard to get the record sealed. Rhode Island, Massachusetts, the states that are right around us, you can't do it. You can't get a pardon. You can't be able to become firefighters and police officers and give back to your community. You can't vote in some of these states if you have a felony. So, you know, it's a blessing to be able to have it. It's a blessing to continue on in your life when you get that pardon. But when you get that felony, it stops a lot of things from happening for you. And when you get rid of it, a lot of things can happen for you.
Let's talk a little bit about the process of a pardon. What are some of the initial steps?
So the initial step, at least the way I do it, I'm quite sure other people have different ways of doing it. You got to get your fingerprints done. You know, I asked a couple of questions when I first start the process. When was your last felony? When was your last misdemeanor? It got to be 3 years from the last date of a misdemeanor, 5 years from the last date of conviction of a felony. Can't be on parole, can't be on probation. You can't have anything going on in another state as far as parole or probation. And once that happens, I send you down to get your fingerprints done. They send me back your record, and then we just get going. You got to get your references, 3 references, 1 family member, 2 non-family members. Need a proof of how you earn your money. And then we're rolling. I go over the application with you, answer the questions the proper way. And then, you know, I got over a 90% approval rate when it comes to the pardon. So I got to know a little bit about what I'm doing. But once we get all that done, wait to 69 months for, depending on how backed up the pardon board is, and you get your answer. Sometimes if you have a nonviolent history, you don't even have to go to a hearing. But if you have a violent history, or if you have a victim, especially a domestic victim or any type of violence, you got to go to a hearing. They want to see your face. And it's all done on Zoom. So you can do it from the comfort of your home. You can do it from your job. You can do it while you're sitting in your car. COVID did that. Before, you used to have to go to the courthouse. But since COVID, they moved it to the Zoom platform. And you just go from there. And then after you get your pardon, say you get granted your pardon, three people vote on you. 2 got to say yes. 1 can say no. But if 2 say no, then you can't get it. So once you get your pardon, you got to wait another 10 weeks to get your certificate, and then you're free from there. Once you get your certificate, that lets you know that your record's supposed to be cleared out of all databases, courthouses, Department of Correction, any police department that you got arrested in. And then you're all set, and you can start applying for the things that you want to apply for. If you have any issues when it comes to your background coming up, you know, it could happen to where they didn't erase it. Sometimes a human error is still there. All you got to do is make a couple phone calls and they get that right.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Amir Williams talking about pardons and the 600 plus that he has under his belt. Again, we're at the end. Your final words and that phone number again.
Oh, my phone number is 203-500-3428. The name of my pardon business is called Mega Inc., making everybody great again. Any final words? I mean, for anybody that's going through that stage of coming home, keep your head up, keep your chin up, keep doing what you're doing. If you're having trouble, I'm a resource. Again, use that number for a lot of things. Anything police related, anything that's related to any question that you may have, I'll try to point you in the right decision. I got a lot of resources, a lot of people that have gotten pardons from me that are doing a lot of things. It could be simple as, oh, I need somebody to fix my plumbing. I got somebody for that. It could be, I got a question about this arrest that happened. I got somebody for that. It doesn't matter what it is. You can reach out to me. I try to be a community resource. I try to answer my phone most of the time. You know, sometimes that's dragging sometimes, but at the same time, I like to help people and I like to encourage people, motivate people. And again, if you have any questions, just give me a call at any time you want to. And that's about it.
All right. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Williams. This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC. I'm Jose Candelario. And these have been the kind words, insightful words of Mr. Amir Williams, Sergeant New Haven Police Department, doing the best he can for his community. And like always, thank you for listening.